Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
I'm stalking. For everybody listening to this, you are not listening on YouTube. Because as of yesterday, I have a one-week suspension on YouTube for discussing odd events that may or may not have happened around an election that may or may not have been America. But apparently, you can't talk about that. That's wrong, Think. I got banned for a week. So, if you're seeing this now on YouTube, it's a week from now. Today is Sunday, February 28th, 2021, 10:22 a.m. Eastern Time. But if you're subscribed on Rumble, BitChute, or Spotify, you're getting the goods as always. So, Dale Comstock back for episode volume 8 of American Badass. And word on the street is Dale might be starting his own podcast. So, get your panties out of a bundle, everybody. You can start getting even more Dale. But with that, I'll hand it over to you, Mr. Dale Comstock. Youngest ever member of Delta Force.
Yeah, so before we go into the stories, right, to the book, American Badass, if any of you out there have the book, American Badass, we're going to talk about the chapter that covers Malik Marin and then the Deer Hunter. But before we go into that, I want to say a couple things. First of all, if you're just now tuning into this podcast, in this series where we're covering the book, my book, American Badass, and you want to know a little bit more about me, go back to volume one, and I talk a little bit about my background. That way you know who I am. Second part, so this is kind of funny, right? Because I just have to put this out there, because I talk a lot, I talk very fast, and I have a lot of energy, but I never always had a lot of energy, right? I was kind of an introvert until around 30, 32, and I kind of popped out of my shell, probably because I was more confident in myself, and so I haven't held back since then, right? So I like to talk, as you know, Tommy. And the other thing I like is covering details, man. To me, details, the devil's in the details always, right? So I don't like to just give a big, broad concept, big, broad story. I like to get into the weeds on stuff. So hence, you know, when we go into my story, actually, it's kind of contradictory, because the book story is actually kind of going into detail. Here, what I'm going to do is give you my just tell you my story by mouth, right, rather than reading to everybody. But before I go there, a couple of things happened to me the last couple of nights that I thought are important. One, for everybody that's listening out there, I'm calling you from Bali, Indonesia. I have a home here. I have an office here. I have a business here. I have a home in Panama City Beach, Florida, so I can move back and forth. Tonight, again, I'm calling you from Bali. And I tend to work late at nights. Why? Because the time change, right? I'm 13 plus hours ahead of Eastern Standard Time. So when it's my nighttime, it's your morning time over there. And so for me to do any stateside business, I have to usually work later at night and early in the morning, right? So I'm usually in my office till at least midnight, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, sometimes 3 o'clock in the morning before I go home. I'm back up at 7 a.m. to continue on. So the last couple of nights while I was sitting here looking at my computer, man, I started getting messages, like on Facebook Messenger, which, by the way, I've been banned for 30 days on Facebook, but at least they let me have Messenger, right? They won't let me post or like anything or anything else, right? And I just got to say this, man. The reason they banned me literally was because I said, quote, "I thought only Americans were that dumb," unquote. And it was labeled hate speech. So I'm like, wait, I'm an American.
So matter, really, yeah. You know, doesn't matter.
I know, right? So anyway, so I got banned for 30 days, but I do get messages across Facebook Messenger, and I also get emails. But I got, in the last couple of nights, I had two guys contact me. One guy was hurting, a veteran, wanted to talk about, he's got some things going through his mind right now. Obviously, he was feeling a little suicidal. He's dealing with a lot of stuff, and just kind of wanted me to kind of talk to him and see if I could kind of, brighten up his day a little bit, right? And then I had another guy contact me. He goes, "Hey, man, what do? You know, when you have a family member to commit suicide, and how do you deal with that, right?" So, interestingly, on the second one, I know exactly what that's like. So my my grandfather on my German side that I was very close to, grew up with. You know, I mean, he was my grandpa, man. And we spent, you know, I love my grandpa. And one day he ended up committing suicide out of the blue. I got in a big argument with my, you know, with my grandmother and disappeared. My dad, my uncle found him hanging from a tree down at the river where my father, grandfather and I used to always hang out and walk together, you know? And so, you know, that was kind of a shock, man, at my age, you know, like, whoa, you know, I really never got over it per se. It was always a seed in the back of my head, you know? And interestingly enough, as I got older and I got to the military, I ended up going through the unit. We were constantly being evaluated by psychologists, right? We had several in-house psychologists, and they were constantly testing us and tweaking the machine, you know, making sure that we're not, malfunction, so to speak, right? So we'd have to get our annual mental checkups. And I remember one day, the psychologist, he was reading my profile, and he told me, he goes, you have all the characteristics of someone that is potentially suicidal. And I got to tell you, man, that was kind of it's kind of shocking because I know what happened to my grandfather. And I thought, man, is it genetic? You know, maybe I'm inheriting a trait for this, right? And makes me more prone for it. And so on one hand, it scared me. But on the other hand, I would argue that that psychologist probably saved my life all these years.
Yeah.
Because I've always thought about that. It's like, man, I'm not going that way out. You know, I've done a lot of dudes. But I'm a coward when it comes to killing myself. I just can't do it, you know, nor do I want to do it, man. I got too much to live for, right? And so I got reasons to live. I have purpose, you know, and my purpose is really it's my children, man. And not only do I want to raise them up to be the best people they can be, but I don't want to take myself out and then have them go, what a dickhead, man, you know?
Yeah.
The old man shot himself. What a coward. What happened there, right? And so, you know, because when you kill yourself, man, you're actually killing a part of everybody that's around you that loves you, man. You know, like my grandfather, man, he killed a part of me, man. You know, our love together, man, it's like, wow. And I haven't gotten over that. And what's interesting is when I look at his pictures, I look just like him now at his age. Wow, I grew up to look like my grandfather. Yeah. Not my father, but my grandfather, you know. And I got pictures of me and him standing there, and he's holding my hand when I'm little, you know. And I talked about it early on in the book, you know, my experience with the patriarchs, right, which was my father, my grandfather, and my German uncle. So I had this other guy, you know, he was having a moment, you know, and all I can tell these people, man, and anybody out there that's ever thought about it or is thinking about it, you know, or down the road it comes across your mind that you want to commit suicide, you know, it ain't worth it, man, because once you do it, it's over. It's over forever. You can't do a redo, man. Yeah. And life gets better. It always gets better. I don't care how bad it gets. Eventually it gets better. Okay. You know, it might not be the best, but it gets better, right? And so the other part of that is life is what you make it, right? So you know, we self-actualize, we create our realities, and it's a matter of it's a state of mind, literally a state of mind. So you know, you can create a better place for yourself in the world regardless of how bad it is for you, right? And so again, I say that because you know, in two nights now, I've had two calls already, and I've had these before. I had one last week. I don't know why people come to me, you know, with these issues, but that's fine, you know, if I can help them and, you know, and keep them around, that's great. That's my purpose, you know, well, one of my purposes anyways. And anybody out there listening, man, it's just not worth it, dude. You're not just killing yourself. You're killing a piece of everybody that loves you. And you know what? If you're doing it to get revenge, you know, at the end of the day, you're the ultimate loser, yeah. You know, you're the ultimate loser, right? So the best thing you can do is rise above the occasion, be the best that you can be, right? Be the best version of yourself and know that life does get better. And, you know, we've all, look, dude, man, everybody thinks I'm Superman, but I'm not even I'm a big sissy, man. You know what? I'm a big pussy at the end of the day, yeah. Man. There's, you know, I can't dunce myself. I don't care how upset I get. I just can't do it, man. I can shoot other people all day long, but I can't do myself, right? And so, we all have a breaking point. I get it. And, you know, I've had my moments, you know. And I was telling my wife the other night, I said, you know what? I said, I don't have a problem with drugs. I don't have a problem with alcohol. I said, I really don't have a problem with money. Even when I don't have money, it's not a big deal, right? And it's, you know, I said, my problem is women, man. they're like my Achilles heel, right?
Kryptonite.
For some reason, man. Yeah, man. They're the ones that always seem to tear my world down, man, or take everything from me, you know? And, you know, but here I am, man. I'm still alive, right? They ain't killed me yet. Can't kill me.
Yeah. but that's I wanted to say, yeah, it does get better, and it does. I mean, today it's February 28th. April 15th will be the 7-year anniversary of my older brother's suicide. I was 23, he was 27. I'm 30 now. Now he's technically my younger brother, and that's a head fuck. But you know, I was suicidal several times, man. That's why I moved home to my parents' house in 2016. And like, dude, it sucks for a long time. Like a lot, not like it'll get better in a couple months. I mean, 5-6 years of like, what the fuck am I doing with my life? Nothing's worth it. What am I doing? But my logic was the same. I was like, man, I took it as like a personal insult by the universe. I was like, I'm not going to let this thing beat me down and not let me experience happiness. It was just, it wasn't even like a desire to live so much as it was a desire to just like be like thick-headed. I was like, I'm not going to let life get the last laugh. And I just held out. And I mean, yeah, dude, there's still troubles every day, but I can tell everyone listening from a firsthand experience, it does get better. Like now, you know, I'm moving out soon. I do a podcast. I make money on it. I become friends with guys like Dale. I regularly email the 10th man to walk on the moon. He's my buddy now. I chit-chat with a guy that walked on the fucking moon. Like, life does get better. It took about 3/4 of a decade. But my God, it did come out on the other end. And it is worth it. And if you had told me this any day for the last 6 years, I would have said, you're fucking retarded. It doesn't get better. But now here I am on year 7, and it does, I mean, it's cheesy, but I mean, the sun does eventually come up. It does, if you just hold out, it does. And now I shoot the shit with Dale, and, you know, we talk shit about Facebook censoring us, and, you know, how we need to bomb China. Like, you won't get to do that if you kill yourself. I stayed alive, and now I'm buddies with Dale.
Let me tell you something, too, man, at my age, I'm getting ready. Man, I cannot believe I'm pushing 58 years shortly, man.
Ah, shut up. And you're going to live to 200.
Well, I am. But the fact that I'm at 58 is like really disconcerting because yesterday I was at 22. And I'm like, where did the time go, right? And so as you get older, time seems to speed up.
It does.
And you want to slow it down and you can't, man. It's like every day, if you're really truly living your life, it's, you know, and you're living the adventure, time flies. Mm-hmm. Like you always say, time flies when you're having fun. It's so true, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, I could make myself miserable and maybe you slow the train down, but for what, right?
For
so
why?
I might as well go fast and furious and have fun while I'm doing it. So I can tell you at my age, man, I'm so happy that I'm still here. You know, I'm still that one, I didn't get killed anywhere along the way. Two, I didn't kill myself. That'd be even more tragic, you know. There's so much more to life to experience. And if you're younger than me, you have no idea, man, what's possible and the reality that you can create. So, there's guys out there that I get it, man. They have their issues for a lot of different reasons. Sometimes it's women. I've been through that, man. You know, I never thought that a woman could, you know, control my happiness. But it happened, and when they walked away and took my happiness, you know, I was a freaking, train wreck. But I've learned a lesson, right? Never put your happiness in the hands of somebody else. Mm-hmm. Make yourself happy, and just be happy with other people. And if they're not around, you're still happy because you make yourself happy, right? So I've learned that important life lesson, man. Always make yourself happy. Do not ever depend on someone else to make you happy. I always hear that shit. You don't make me happy anymore. It's not my damn job to make you happy. Your job is to be happy. Make yourself happy and be happy with me. If you can't be happy with me, move on out. And that's the thing about women. women, man. They're like buses. They come along every couple of minutes, right? Now, my kids are different, right? The kids are the constant. They never come and go, man. And that's my center of my universe. And I mentioned the word purpose before. They are my purpose.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
To raise them, to mentor them, to be all, you know, to be everything that they would, you know, that they would hope that I would be for them as a father, right? And so when I do eventually die from natural causes, or, you know, freaking in a gunfight with a bunch of bank robbers or some shit, you know, that when I do check out, they go, man, that my dad was a hero, man. And they sing me praises, right? You know, and then there's other guys that, you know, they have issues with, you know, their wartime experience, you know. And look, everybody deals with things differently. I'm not knocking anybody, but we all have our different demons, you know. Yeah, me personally, I don't lose any sleep at night for, you know, letting air out of bad guys, man. And, you know, fine. They signed up for it just like I did, right? Mm-hmm. And I just happened to outperform them. You know, the issues I come up with and I've had were with, you know, the experiences with kids, you know, and women in combat situations, right? And the screaming, man, and all this that goes along with it, and the death for them, right? That's so unfair, and that's the one that's hard to live with, particularly if you have children like I do, right? So I think we've talked about this before a little bit, but basically, you know, that's that for me as a father, you know, and as a husband. That's the killer, man. That's what that hurts you more than freaking anything else, man. It's seeing the, you know, the crying and screaming and the tears and the fear, especially in little children, man. It's just so wrong, right? And so everybody has their, you know, has their issues. You know, some of it's watching your guy next to you, your buddy on your team, you know, get smoke checked next to you, like, holy shit, you know. I don't have that issue, not because I don't care about my friends or anything like that, but I know that all my friends, when we signed up, we agreed to do this, and we knew the risk, and we accepted the risk. And I know that all my friends that were with me, or, you know, that went to combat with me in one way or another, that were killed, I'm not going to say they died with a smile on their face, but they died doing what they wanted to do, right? And, you know, that's a better way to go out than suicide. And if you can't go out in combat, you know, go out natural causes doing great, wonderful things, and leave behind a legacy, you know. And so, I talk about my coaching. So one is, what is your purpose? Define that. Most people don't even know what their purpose in life is. Two is, how do you want to be remembered, man? You know? And so those, if you can establish those two things right there, you basically set a compass heading for life and get you from here to wherever hell you want to go, to that happy place. Anyways, so I just want to kind of start with that real quick for anybody else out there listening. And, you know, feel free to contact me, you know, I don't care, Facebook, any way, you know, I'm easy to find, right? Just message me. And, if you need to chat about something, you know, I'd rather talk to you than have you, you know, do something stupid, you know? And, you know, it's just not worth it, man. Yeah, I know everybody says that, it's not worth it, man. But, you know, it really ain't worth it, you know? And we, you know, talk some sense to you, you know.
It's really not.
I'm here for you.
Yeah, it's really not worth it, man. Again, as someone that lost a brother to suicide, it's like life can be shitty. Life can be shitty for several years. Life can be shitty for 5, 6, 7 years. But dude, I bet if you could talk to my brother right now, I guarantee you he'd be like, "Fuck, like, why did I check out?" Like, life can suck for a while, and it can suck for half a decade, it can suck for a decade, but like, it does eventually open up. And it's, and you know what, if it never opens up, guess what, you eventually get to die anyway from natural causes, so it's like you get to check out anyway, like,
yeah.
So just, yeah, I'll put Dale's Instagram in the description and stick it in the comment, so So yeah, if anyone wants to reach out to Dale, do so.
Yeah,
and
I think it's Official American Badass.
Yeah,
Dale Comstock, American Badass Instagram. Yeah,
that's where I contacted you last year. I was just like, "Hey man, we do my podcast." I'd be delighted. I was like, "Fuck yeah!"
you know, who made it my account was my daughter, my teenage daughter. She came up with the whole thing.
Hell yeah!
Dad, you need an Instagram account, Official American Badass. You know, and I had a Hollywood movie producer contact me not so long ago. He goes, dude, he said you should have 1 million followers on Instagram. I go, yeah, I just don't pay attention to social media. And I really haven't been really trying to promote myself per se. And he goes, you know what you need to do? He goes, you need to find a little teenage kid to do your Instagram account for you. It'll make you freaking famous, you know?
Exactly. I said,
yeah, you're probably right.
They figure this shit out more than me. Dude, there's some kid contacted me the other day. He's got some channel on YouTube where he just puts out memes. He's got 250,000 subscribers, and he messaged me and he goes, how do you not have more subscribers? He was like, you talk to Delta Force guys, you talk to astronauts, you talk to, and I was like, I don't fucking know. I was like, apparently I need to stop having genuine conversations with intelligent people, and instead I just need to start making memes, because he has 250,000, and I was like, Jesus Christ. But,
hey. Well, the other part of it is time, man. You know, it takes time to build that following too, right? It's not overnight. So, you know, I just haven't paid attention to it over all these years, and now I'm kind of getting it's like, okay, I'm way behind the eight ball, but I'm gonna catch up, man. You know, there's guys out there, I'm gonna overrun them, man, down the road. Goggins and all these other dudes out there, man.
Yeah, you will. You're gonna overrun Goggins and Jocko. I'm gonna overrun Rogan, and we'll be at the top of the pile, and they won't be able to ban us because we'll buy our own radio tower. And our own internet connection, they won't be able to ban us. We'll buy Elon Musk's satellite internet. They won't be able to ban us. You fucking coming at you live. It'll just be nothing but politically incorrect shit. Dale teaching you how to shoot down range. I'll be screaming obscenities. Fuck yeah, that's the goal. But until then, we're not there. So, but
build it.
Take it away. Take it away, Dale.
Let's with, so American next story. The next chapter is. Title of my Lake Marin, and so a little bit of backstory on this guy, right? So, you know, I spent 9.5 years traveling back and forth to Afghanistan, and not nine and a half years straight, but in 9.5 years, I spent several years in Afghanistan. So much so that I remember one day landing in Kabul, and we had the bulletproof bus pick us up from the airfield and drive us to the embassy. And it had these big windows on and stuff. And I remember we pull up to a road intersection downtown Kabul, and I see a dude standing in the corner, and he's waving, right, like frantically waving at me. And I take a closer look and go, what the hell? That's so-and-so, right? He's the janitor, right? Custodian at one of the bases I was at. They cleaned all the shit and everything, you know? And he's downtown Kabul and recognizes me in the front of this freaking bus. Now I'm like, oh my God, now you know you've been there. You've been coming too many times. But when people on the street start recognizing you, then I had another guy we rolled up. He goes, hey, I remember you. You arrested me the last time. Uh-huh. Jeez, man. Anyways, so this time I was up in...
I was going to say, most people, you have that problem with like bars. You go to a bar and the bartender Dale's the only person that goes to fucking Kabul, and they're all like, Dale! And it's like, Dale's a regular. They're like, hey, you killed my uncle.
Hey, I was out in the field one time. No shit, man. Out in the field in Afghanistan, and the guys had all this stuff laying out there and shit to read, right, to kill the boredom. I look over, and there's a magazine, a Soldier of Fortune magazine, with yours truly in the magazine, 3 full pages, right? Advertisement. Like, holy shit, right? And I wasn't there in true name. And I'm trying to hide all this stuff and get rid of it, you know, because people are reading it out in the field. Anyways, I'm not hard to recognize, even with the Fu Manchu, I guess. But so what I talk about here real quick is one of my times in Afghanistan, up along the Afghan-Pakistani border. Basically a northeast province of Afghanistan called the Kunar River, because it's pronounced Kunar. Some people call it Kunar, whatever you want to call it. But it's a valley, and you know, high mountains and really picturesque, man. You know, I remember the first time I went up there, I think it was 2003, and we went up into the Shigal, which is a valley. And I gotta tell you, man, we did a foot patrol up into the Chagall. We were going to try to link up with one of the villages, the elders there, and just basically do what we do, man. And that is go there, win hearts and minds, you know, try to collect some information. You help us, we help protect you type thing. We give you stuff, you know. You need Band-Aids, you need medical stuff, you know, we got all that for you, right? So that was kind of the intent, but the objective is win hearts and minds, you know, win favor from these people that will now give you information, intelligence, and things you will need to help, you know, prosecute the war. So I remember going up in Chagall, man, and I believe this was my first time out with this group up in this area, right? And we were in a small, I won't name the name of the camp, right? But it was a very small camp, maybe about 150 meters by 150 meters square, maybe 200 meters long, 150, 200 meters long, something like that. It was not very big. It was actually an old Russian compound when the Russians were there, okay? A little fortress. And so as the story goes, if you imagine this, the compound, it was completely walled in. Everything was inside the wall. We had, you know, we had guard towers on the corners and stuff, barbed wire everywhere. We had, you know, literally had a minefield all the way around the compound as well, barbed wire, machine guns. And eventually we had to pull the mines out, right? Because the Geneva Convention says you can't use mines. So we had to pull the Claymore mines out, you know, stupid stuff, right? And, you know, I remember when they were out there always digging and stuff, you know, they were finding bones, right? But skeletal remains. And as a...
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters. And what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble. With exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Story goes, as it was told to me, this was a former Spetsnaz Special Forces camp. It had about 300 of their Russian SS guys there. And they were holding down. It was Fort Apache, man. And all around us was, there was actually one particular warlord. His name was... I'm having a brain fart. Okay, well, anyways, there's one big warlord, right? There's a lot of warlords in Afghanistan, but this guy controlled this whole territory. And and it's all high ground. They own the high ground, and I don't know why they put this camp down the valley, but they put it in the valley, right? So, anyways, one day the Russian commander decided, we're going to go out and we're going to get call all the elders, anyone of importance, all the military age males, we call them mams, bring them all out. And we're going to have a conversation about, you know, can we just all get along type thing. Right. And actually it was a setup is what it was. So they brought all these people out, you know, village elders, doctors, the police, anyone of prominence, and kill them all, shut them down, load them all down. Right. And bad move. So what happened then was this camp came under siege by, his name's going to come to me here in a minute, man. I mean, it's on the tip of my tongue. But anyways, came under siege and all of them were wiped out. All 300 freaking dead, right? And that's where all the bones came up from around the compound. And
came under siege against the Spetsnaz?
The Spetsnaz were under siege from the the warlord.
But it's because the Spetsnaz killed all the military age males.
Yeah, okay. They killed everybody from that village, right? Which was right outside the gates,
okay,
right?
Okay.
And so basically, I don't know what he thought he was going to solve by doing that, you know. But you know, the commander did it, and it all backfired. They all got killed for it. So now we're living in this place, right? So, you know, with time, we're refortifying it, building it up. You know, that's what you do, man. You keep fortifying your defenses, make it bigger, better, stronger. And we were running operations out of there. So we ran a lot of operations out of there. And I'll be talking about more later on in the book. But on this particular one, there was a guy. So if you can just imagine, the Konar River runs north-south. It divides the Pakistani border and the Afghan border. And it's very high terrain. Very high terrain. In fact, going back to the Chagall Valley, as I mentioned a minute ago, it was so picturesque. I mean, it was, when I went there, it was January, February, March. And Oh my God, man. Just green rolling mountains, man. Like, you know, it was like Lords of the Rings type stuff, man. You know, just beautiful scenery and flowers and meadows and, you know, poppy fields, yeah. and you know, and running streams and little villages, you know, it was really cool. It was very surreal actually. And so, we had this guy though on the, he was an Afghani police chief is what he was. Okay. This guy was Malik Meharan. And, he was a police chief. However, we also know that in Afghanistan, there was the formal government and then there was the shadow government, right? The shadow kind of government ran everything in the shadows, right? And so this guy was the chief of police for the ANP, the Afghan National Police, in that province. And, he had a lot of troops under him, right? But we also know that he's working both sides, right? He's on the part of the shadow government too, subverting, you know, the formal government, et cetera, et cetera. That's what goes on there, right? A lot of games, man. Just, you know, a lot of, I mean, this is how it works. So this guy was pretty clever. He came up on our radar as, you know, the guy we need to get because we knew who he was and what he was doing. But what he had done, he was on the east side of the river, and on the east side of the river, there's a valley running further east, west east. And he was up inside this valley in the low ground. He had a home up there, right? And by the way, these homes are not like, you know, like a typical American home. These are compounds. They're mud wall compounds. They're little fortresses, little castles. That's how they live there. Actually, that's how they live here in Indonesia. Everybody's got a wall around their house. Even my villa, man, it's all completely walled in with about an 8-9 foot wall in it, right? So what this guy was doing, and there was only one bridge across the river, probably within 20 kilometers north and 20 kilometers south. And fortunately for us, the bridge was about 6 kilometers south of our camp. And so all we had to do was drive 6 kilometers south, you know, bang a left turn, go over the bridge, and then we're on the other side of the river, and then go up the river maybe 3 or 4 kilometers, bang another right, and we're inside the valley where he stays. Well, what he had done was he placed police checkpoints on the bridge, right? You couldn't just come across the bridge without getting stopped, you know, a lot of questions. And it was just a delay tactic, right? So if anytime Americans would come across the bridge, they would stop us. Hey, where are you going? What's going on? You know, how many guys you got, you know? And while that's going on, the guy's on the phone calling Malik, going, hey, Americans come across the river. And what he would do is bug out. He would take off, knowing that he might be, you know, the target that night. And so that was, and so it's impossible to catch this guy because of that, right? And so we wanted him pretty badly. And I remember thinking, okay, how are we going to get this guy? And I figured it out one day. You know, we tried several times, dry hole, he kept getting away. I said, I got it. We're gonna get this guy. So here's what I planned. What I was gonna do is take about 20 vehicles, right? Basically a pickup trucks, Hilux pickup trucks, right? Gun trucks. And, you know, a shit ton of my fighters with me. And what we're gonna do is in the middle of the night, we're gonna drive down to this bridge, okay? And then, you know, it was like, I don't know, it was daytime still. We'd drive down to the bridge, daylight hours, go, hey guys, how's it going? We're gonna go south and we're gonna just drive up the valley down there a little bit. We're gonna set up some vehicle checkpoints, VCPs, right? And like, oh, okay. And that's exactly what we did, right? We went across the bridge. We didn't go north. We went south, like we said we would. We went down about 4 or 5 kilometers. We stopped and I set my force in a big perimeter. We had about 20-something gun trucks, 23 gun trucks, something like that. And some of them were a big perimeter, and then we had a couple of vehicles positioned on the road. Guys on the road, any vehicle would have come through, you know, we stop the vehicle, get out of the car, we need to search your car, okay, you know, okay, you can go on, right? We just did that shenanigans all day long, calling BCPs. And these are dirt roads, by the way. These are not hardball roads or anything like that. It's pretty primitive. So the whole idea was to stay out there long enough so the guards, you know, the cops at the gate or the bridge going, hey, yeah, they're still out there doing the BCP thing. And then, you know, not really. If the Malik had already left, you're like, he's clear, come back, you're just running BCPs, you're good. So he came back to the home. So that was the plan. And then later on that night, probably around midnight, you know, I make sure we're making plenty of noise down there. Everybody knows we're there. You know, we're stopping cars, lights and stuff, you know, making a big production out of it. But while that was going on, what I actually did is I took most of the force minus the drivers of the vehicles. So I had about 40 guys with me. And what I did is I assembled them. And what we decided to do, what I decided to do is we're going to move basically in a northeastern direction. And there was some high ground, right? Because he was living in a valley in between these mountaintops. And so what we're going to have to do is move northeast and then climb this mountain, right? Come over the top of the ridge and then come swooping down the backside of the valley and then encircle him, right? So he couldn't get out. And the other thing I had to do was I brought another special forces team across the bridge at what we call H-hour hit time, right? What they had to do was come across the bridge, and as they came across the bridge, they basically, you know, pulled guns on all the guards and the police, locked them up, arrested them, you know, and then so they couldn't make the phone call. And then what they did is once they did that, they came in and blocked off the mouth of the valley, right, with their vehicles. So now we had them, you know, basically in a fishbowl, right? So, you know, that's exactly, so we ended up on this ridge line. We stood up on the, we stayed up on the high ground till a certain time. And then the plan was, when his lights went out in his you know, in his compound, knowing he's going to bed down, that's when we were coming again. We already knew that the front had been locked down. We had eyes on the target, so we know he didn't squirt or get out of the target. And you know, we had him wrapped up. And so a bunch of weird things happened, though. One of the weird things that really happened, which we couldn't figure out, was this Cobra helicopter shows up. So we're up on the high ground. We're actually not that high up. We're maybe 200, 300 meters up on a ledge. And we're just kind of like laying on the ground, just taking our time, waiting, letting the time go by. And all of a sudden, H-64 attack helicopter comes flying in and just hovers over his house. Like, literally, at eye level to us, just he's hovering over his house. I'm, what is going on here, right? So I'm thinking this guy's going to get out for sure, and he's going to start running because he thinks he's under siege by a helicopter. We don't know why the helicopter did it. He kind of hovered around for a little while, and then he kind of flew away. Okay. And nothing happened. So we then went down, finally, you know, let's go down and do this thing. So I was the breacher, among other things, right? I'm the only guy that can handle the explosives. So I built a breaching charge, and we didn't have these – we didn't have these, they're called red devils, sometimes they call them blue devils, sometimes they call them green devils, but basically what they are, they're plastic connectors that actually attach firing systems to the dead core of, you know, basically the dead core of an explosive charge, right? So you keep the firing system and the explosive separate until you're ready to use them, and then you basically marry them up with this particular system, right? Well, we had run out of these daggone, you know, red devils. So I had to go old school, and I was basically tie a figure eight knot with the dead cord, you know, which dead cord and time fuse is very thick and it's very hard to work with, right? And I'm trying to do this in a hurry. So I get up to the door, and it's, and he's got this big, giant wooden garage door outside the compound, right? Massive wooden door. And so I'm thinking, shit, you know, how am I going to get through this daggone door? So I placed the charge. There was a smaller door that was carved out of the bigger door. And I said, okay, this is it. So I placed the charge on it, pulled the firing system. I run back behind cover. And then it's like a little tiny pop. And the door didn't even open up. What happened was when I tied the figure eight, you got to remember, it's pitch black. I'm in a hurry and I'm wearing flight gloves. And this whole thing just kind of came unraveled. I guess I didn't tie a good figure eight. And it fell off the door. It fell off the charge, right? And it just, the only thing it fired was the cap and not the charge itself. Well, my Afghans, they thought that was a charge, right? And so I'm like, hey, let's go. And then when it ran to the door was still closed. The guy just kicked it and goes in, right? So I was like, okay, whatever, right? So we got in. And we didn't even need the explosion. You could just kick it in from the outset. But we didn't know that. So I remember we entered. And that's when it kind of got interesting, right? So he was there, and so was all his family and whoever else was there, a bunch of women, right? And, you know, like over there, right, they can have lots of women and kids and stuff. And you know, guests, relatives, everybody's living in this daggone compound, right, which was multiple little buildings inside a compound. I remember going in, man, we're kicking in doors. And you know, the funniest shit is when you kick in a door, you go to clear a room, and you're tripping over goats and chickens and shit, right? Because they're all inside the room in the bedroom, right? With everybody else. They're just part of the furniture, right? And so, you know, you don't have to worry about falling over a couch or a coffee table. It's usually going to be a cow or a goat or something. There's, you know, I've literally gone into a room and the guy's asleep holding his chicken. right? Like sleeping with his pet chicken, you know? Like, whoa, whoa, wait, don't hurt my little chicken, you know? Or some of the stuff you see, you know, people having sex, you know? Oh my, that's another story I have later on about that. But you come across some really interesting moments in those nights. But anyways, so we clear the place, we catch the guy, you know, we arrest him, and, you know, I thought he was a little sheep. He looked a little surprised, like, damn, how did they catch me, you know? But he didn't realize we had a pretty elaborate plan, and it worked, right? So, and off he goes, right? So, and I remember when the op was over, the sun was coming up, and usually you try to get back to, you know, your camp, your fob, before it gets daylight, right? Because if it's daytime, you're obviously, the Afghans can see you, the Taliban can see you, they can set you up for an IED, ambushes, all kinds of stuff. So we try to get back in the cover of darkness. This particular night, it was, you know, sun was coming up, and we were loading, you know, we call them PUCs, personnel under control, right? Because you can't call them prisoners, detainees, right? Because, you know, fucking goddamn John McCain, you know, some of these other dickheads, you know, you can't be bad to the bad man because you'll just make them badder, you know, that kind of bullshit, yeah, right?
So yeah, make them angry.
Yeah, you know, it just, oh my God, I got stories, a ton of those stories too. But anyway, so we pucked everybody. We still flex tied them. You know, we still treat them like prisoners. We just call them pucks, not prisoners, right? You're under our control, prisoner, puck, person. And so I remember after we got everybody loaded up and the trucks were getting ready to drive off, we left all the women behind, right? I mean, because you could hear all the women wailing and screaming, you know, and I remember one of the guys in my vehicle with me said, he goes, what that means? He goes, when the women are screaming. And I go, what? He goes, that means we got the right guy because they know he ain't ever coming back. I'm like, that's good. That's good to know, right? Okay. And I mean, yeah, they're all you know, wailing and stuff because they know we got the old man. He ain't coming back. So, that was Malik, man, Malik Marin. And, yeah, it was a fun mission because the way it went off, you know, and it just showed that, man, we had a good plan. You know, we used a ruse, made them believe we're going to set up a BCP to the south. You know, we really played it up. And then little did they know, in the cover of darkness, you know, I took about 40 Afghans and we lined them up, got a head count, got a nods going, pitch black, and silently snuck off into the desert, up into the mountains, you know, and climbed the mountains, got to the other side, surrounded the place, you know, and then it was a great plan, man. Then SF guys at their time came across the bridge, put guns on the police, locked them down, handcuffed them, took their phones, and then positioned themselves at the mouth of the valley. So there's no way he scored now. And we actually had a platoon of Marines that were coming in on the other side, on the far ridge, but we had a guy break a femur, one of the Marines break a femur, so they kind of got delayed. They were kind of there, but they weren't there. But, you know, that guy, if he would have run, he would have never made up that mountain anyway. So we were still good. But perfectly executed, went really well. And, you know, we got our guy. So that was one of my experiences there. There's many of them up there. But the next one I want to go into, the next story.
Hold on, Dale. Let me piss. Shut up, right. Dale. Shut up.
Always pissing, man. I told you got to get one of those piss tubes the race car drivers have, man. anyways, so the next story I'm going to go into is the next chapter. It's called A Deer Hunter. And I think it's kind of funny, actually, what happened to me. And so by virtue of being a fact that I was in the Delta Force, I spent almost 10 years there. You know, it was inevitable that at some point during my tenure in the organization that I would be a part of the selection team that would actually assess, select the new recruits, right? My job was to help facilitate the process, the training, or the selection course. I keep saying training. That comes later. So the course, I won't name where it's done. I can just tell you it's up in northeast United States, very mountainous terrain. It's actually not really a secret where it's located. But again, just so I don't get myself in trouble, I'm not going to mention the actual location. But so my job, and I was a cadre three different times. And as a cadre, you know, there's certain things that we had to do, and it was not negotiable. So the Delta Force selection course, let me just start by saying that I've mentioned it a couple of times before, and I'll say it again for all the viewers, new viewers, is very unique in that if you go to look at the Navy SEALs, the Bud School, right, or some of these other courses, Special Forces, everybody goes through as a group, you know, you see them on the movie, you're running down a beach with a log or a bow, you know, rolling the sand, yeah. You know, and it's a group, it's really a group effort. Right, it's just, can you keep up with the group? And guys fall out, they go ring the bell, and they're done. Delta Force selection is the most unique selection course in the world. Why? Because every man is selected based on his individual merit. Okay, first of all, nobody's yelling at you, nobody's encouraging you, nobody's smiling, everybody's stoic. You don't know what the standard is, you're just told to do the best you can. Whatever that means, do the best you can. When's it gonna end? When it ends. How long do I go? Until it ends, right? And so, and just keep doing the best you can, right? So that, do the best you can physically and mentally every day, day in and day out, takes its toll, because the first thing that goes is your body. If you're doing the best you can, your body's only got so much endurance in it before it starts to break down. Your knees start to go out, everything starts to hurt, you're losing weight. And then what happens is your mind starts to go, right? And so all the stress and pressure you're under, you put on yourself. Nobody else is putting it on you, right? They just put you out the truck, say, have a good one. What's the standard? Do the best you can.
Yeah, let your own mind eat you, kind of.
That's basically what it does, right? So, example, in my selection course, when I went through, there were 110 of us that were selected Army-wide. 110 Army-wide that were in this course. Of the 110 that started the course, six of us completed it and three of us were selected. I was the youngest guy ever to make it to the unit at the age of 23. So that gives you an idea.
You can't apply for selection, right?
No.
So they ask you.
Yeah, basically what happens is the recruiter comes around, they give a recruiting briefing, and then if you think you're qualified, you'd like to try, you turn your paperwork in. Actually, what they normally do is they already canvass the military, all the records. They go, okay, all these guys are qualified. They send a letter to every unit, go, listen, we're going to be at your camp, your base. And at this time, and it's a requirement, you have to send us all these guys on this list because they are qualified to come to our briefing. They don't have to sign up, but they have to come to it, right? So they come to it. So I already kind of pre-screened, right, just to come to the briefing. And then if they like it, they go, yeah, I want to try out. Then they go through the next phase, which is another background investigation that doesn't include the assessment selection process, right? So it's a staged process. It's very lengthy. It's a long time to get through it. And very few people actually get through it on the other end. Very few, very small numbers. Happens a couple times a year, and that is it. So that's what makes it so different and unique. And you know, people ask the question, well, you know, what kind of man, you know, does Delta Force select, you know? And the easy answer is the best man. And actually, I've heard it couched the right man, okay? It's the right guy because, you know, here I am, 23 years old, the youngest guy ever, 10 years younger than the average guy that goes there with 4 years of military experience out of the 82nd. And here I am.
Yeah.
I was fortunate, you know, I worked very hard to get there. I earned it. I know that, you know, I trained like a crazy man. But anyways, so what I wanted to go with is, so I ended up going, so after I got to Delta, you know, in a squadron over the years, eventually, you know, we would have to support the training, selection and training detachment, right, where they would run these courses. And their job was to go to this other country, this other state, and run this course, right, which was a lengthy period of time. And they needed a troop out of a squadron to come support it. So my troop was tasked with it a couple of times, you know, so I had the opportunity to go up there and now be on the other side of the fence. You know, we're not the student, but now I'm actually the cadre. And I'm the guy with the straight face all the time, you know, not yelling at you, not winking at you, not smiling, you know, straight face, asking where you are, where you going, have a good one. You know, and it was a lot of fun. It actually was a lot of fun the times that I did it. But one time, so something, this is where it gets kind of interesting. So in the morning, we would pick up our students at the formation. They got their assignments, right? You know, and they were told what vehicle to get on. They got on the vehicles. And I think we had, on average, I had 10 guys in my vehicle. Every pickup truck had 10 guys, and they were covered, so they didn't know where they were at, where they were going. And everything was a secret, right? And so we had to drive them out to their drop-off points, right? We call them RVs, rendezvous points, okay? And from that, the RV, they got their grid coordinates, they got all their information, where they had to go from that point on, which is all cross-country, you know, mountainous terrain. You can't use trails or roads, okay? All that's forbidden. You got to literally go overland with your rucksack and your gear with you. And you don't know how far you're going. You just know how far the first leg is because we already told you that. But you don't know what the time standard is. And you don't know how many of these legs you have all day and night, right? It's going on like forever. And so when you're wondering how fast do I go?
Yeah, it conserve energy versus you don't want to go too slow.
Do the best you can, right? And so, and for most guys, it's like, well, I better go as fast as I can because I don't know what the minimum standard is, right? I don't know if I can afford to walk, maybe, yeah. You know? And so you haul, that's where the stress really starts, man, because you're smoked, man, because you just don't know, am I going fast enough?
Yeah.
You know, and if you want it bad enough, you're just going to keep pushing and pushing and pushing. Hope to God it's good enough to get you to the other end, right? Which is, for most guys, it's not enough. They just can't. They just don't have enough gas in the tank. Just don't have enough drive to get them to the other end. So I remember one day, I'm taking my guys out to their first drop-off point early in the morning, and there was another guy already out there, another Delta guy operator out there, cadre. He had just dropped off his guys. And you don't drop them all off at one time. Basically, everything stays buttoned up. You take one guy off the truck at a time. You bring him around the front truck. You show him his grid coordinates. Where you at? Where you going? I'm here, Sergeant. I'm going there. Have a good one. They kind of look at you. And say, have a good one. Get out of here. Right? They're gone. And you wait about 5 minutes and bring another one out. You do the same thing, right? So the idea is every guy leaves the RV by himself. And they're going to go in different directions like a starburst, right? They don't know. They can't follow each other because they have different grids, right? So my first guy that was already there, he had dropped his 10 guys off. And on my way out there, he called me on the radio. He goes, hey, man. He goes, listen, you know, I know you're coming out to this point, this drop-off point. But he goes, just be aware, man. There's a deer out here. And you know, he's been hurt. He's hurt pretty bad. You know, I just want you to know he's laying on a tree under here. You know, make you aware of that. And I'm like, yeah, so what? You know, why are you telling me that? You know, I'm thinking, well, why don't you deal with it? You know, why, like what? You know, right? And so this particular guy was not, he was questionable, very questionable. In fact, he didn't last very long, right? We don't even know how the hell he made it there, but he lasted for a short period of time. And that was one of those days I'm questioning him going, well, take care of it, you know. If it's a wounded deer and he's going to die, freaking put it out of his misery, right? Well, we didn't have guns, and so I show up, and bless me. He pulls away. He goes, "Hey, man." He goes, "All right, all my guys are gone." He goes, "Hey, that deer's laying on a tree over there, you know." And I'm like, okay, right? And he leaves, right? And so I'm not even wasting my time with the deer right now. I got a job to do. So I get all my guys out. It takes about an hour to get all the guys going, right? So they're off to the races. And then I go over to look at this deer, and I see it, and I was like, yeah, sure enough, man, he's missing his back legs. Apparently he got ran over by a car or something the night before, but his back legs were gone, right? Damn. But he's alive. It's, you know, it's okay. You know, it's, you know, ears are up, you know, he just can't run. He's only got two front legs. And so I'm thinking, oh, man, you know, I can't leave him laying here. He's going to suffer and die, you know, and maybe I can put him out of his misery. Well, we didn't carry guns. We weren't allowed to have firearms with us, right? So I'm thinking, okay, what am I going to do? I'm going to do this, right? So I go back, and I have a Swiss Army knife in my pocket, right? I got like a 2.5-inch blade. And okay. And I find a crowbar. In the back of the truck, there's a crowbar, Swiss Army knife. About as deadly as I'm going to be able to get, right? And so, so when I go back to get this deer, right, my thinking was, okay, I'm just going to bludgeon him, you know, and maybe cut his throat, you know, and just bleed him out, right? And so, but when I start approaching him, this little shit gets up on two legs and starts running, like hauling ass through the woods, right? Dragging it back in behind, but he's freaking moving out pretty good. And I'm like on a dead run behind him, like, holy shit, you know? And I'm like, slow down, little buddy. I just want to kill you, you know? I just want to put you out of your misery, man. And so this thing runs out on the hardball road, right? It's a little two-lane road. There's no traffic on it, right? It's out in the country and in the mountains. And so when he gets on the road, he's literally now running down the center line, right? The yellow lines, as fast as he can. And a little leg going on. And I'm like, holy shit, I'm right behind him, right? And I'm swinging on a crowbar. I keep missing. And finally, I close the gap just enough. I crack him in the back of the head once. Crowbar, enough to slow him down. I jump on his back, right? And I'm like riding him like a horse, but he's only got two legs. So I squash him on asphalt. I'm sitting on his back. And I already had figured out what I needed to do. I drop the crowbar, and I grab him around the snout, and I lift his head up, right? And just expose his throat, and I take the Swiss Army knife. And just cut his throat with it, right? Yeah. Open him up. So I open him up, and I'm sitting on him. I'm bleeding him out. Blood's going all over the place, right? And I'm freaking, and I'm taking like a deep breath, like, holy shit, you know, that was freaking intense. And when I look up, one of my students had come back, and he's standing on the side of the road holding his map, and he's watching this whole thing go down. and I look at him and go, what the fuck are you looking at? Get out of here, right? And you got someone to go.
You're next.
And he takes off running the freaking woods, right? And I thought about it. I go, oh, man, wait till the night when he's sitting around the campfire with these guys. He goes, man, you're never going to
believe what I saw. You'll never fucking believe what I saw.
He ran down a deer with a crowbar and a Swiss Army
knife. Cut his fucking throat.
Well, anyway, so I take care of that problem, right? And no point in letting it go to waste. So I throw it in the back of the truck, you know?
Yeah.
And I figure we'll eat that sucker later. So... And so then this was like a Friday when this happened, and this particular weekend was going to be like a free weekend because we normally worked every day, all night, every night, right? And in fact, this particular day was like a training day. It was actually the selection course yet. So they had on this Friday was the last day of their train up. Right, get them figured out how to do this thing. And then we're going to take the weekend off. And then Monday, the whole course takes off and starts, right? The assessment part. So we had the weekend off, that's what I'm trying to say. And so we were allowed to bring our wives and girlfriends up, you know, and hang out with them a little bit, you know, because we hadn't seen them in a while. And so my ex-wife, way back, she comes up to see me. And we go to this place. It's a resort like up in the mountains. And we're like, hey, why don't you just get a room up there and we'll hang out up there, resort area, beautiful, you know, mountainous terrain, and you know, freaking spend a weekend together. Mm-hmm. So she shows up, and I'm driving a red Mustang GT 5.0 at the time, right? It's all tricked out, man. Mag wheels, you know, I pretty hooked it up, man. It's my pride and joy. And you know, at freaking we're at the resort, and then I think it was Sunday morning we were leaving the resort, and it was like a really narrow two lane road, right, coming out of the resort to the woods, you know, and you couldn't drive very fast. I mean, the max speed was probably 25 miles an hour, and there's these, you know, deer crossing signs everywhere. So I'm aware there's a lot of deer out in this area, right? Big damn deer. And big damn deer. That's like big ass deer, but they're big damn deer. And so I got my wife in the car, and my Mustang's red. And so I'm deliberately driving slow down this windy road. And all of a sudden, these two deer come out, right? Bucks, big ones. The first one comes darting out and runs right in front of my car to the other side of the road. And right on his heels is the second one. Now, I don't know what this guy was thinking. Rather than running in front of my car, he runs right into the car, and he hits my front quarter panel. And he hits it so hard that when he hits it, he launches straight up in the air to the point where we can't even see him through the windshield, like up in the air like a rocket, right? And when that happened, my car was red. He took all the paint off, the red paint off, and it kind of like somehow sprinkled on the windshield. So it looked like red blood on the windshield, right? And he crushed the quarter panel. The rocker arms. He slashed my tire, literally slashed the damn tire. He went up and then he came down. He landed on my roof, slid down the roof and pulled my mirror off, knocked off the quarter panel, the rocker panel on that side of the car. Right. It was a serious collision, man. And he just demolished my car and he hit me. I didn't even hit him. And so and my ex-wife was just freaking out over there. I think she was my girlfriend at the time. And, not she was my wife because she was my girlfriend. I probably wouldn't have married her after that. But so she's freaking out over there and I'm like freaking out. Right. And this deer is by my car window, driver's side window. And he's like on two back legs. And his leg, you know, front legs are like, you know, it's like a stallion. He's up in the air, you know, legs are going, you know, crazy. His tongue sticking out. He's got he's doing the moonwalk backwards, you know, the electric slide. And he falls down at the edge and down the other side in this ravine. And by this, my wife's like lost her shit, right? Like, oh my God, you know. And I'm not freaking out. But I'm actually kind of mad because he just jacked up my car. And so I throw it in park. I take my seatbelts off. I get out. I walk over to the edge. I look down. And there he is laying there, right? And he's hurt, man. He's done. But he's still alive, right? Mm-hmm. I can see him. He's breathing. And his tongue's sticking out. And his eyes rolling up. And fuck you. I got to put him out of his misery. So I go back. My wife gets out of the car. Ex-wife gets out of the car. And I go to the hatch, lift the hatch up. And I'm digging through my toolbox. And I'm looking for, I know I had a box cutter back there. That's what I was looking for, right? And because, again, I didn't have anything else.
Yeah.
I don't even know if I had my Swiss Army knife with me, right? So I knew I had a box cutter back there with me. So I'm digging, I find the box cutter. And as I'm digging, my ex-wife's like, what are you doing? What are you looking for? I go, I'm looking for a knife. And she goes, for what? I go, so I can cut his throat, right? Because I'm thinking, could put him out of his misery, right. Cut his throat. Yeah. And she was like, for what? He didn't mean to hit your car. And I said, what? I said, maybe I need to cut your damn throat, right? Because what the hell are you talking about? She didn't get it, right? I'm going to kill this thing.
Yeah, it's suffering.
And she's
yeah.
like, what? He didn't mean to hit your car. I'm like, Jesus, right? Are you kidding me?
Not, yeah, so by not, the time I, it's not revenge. It's not like, fuck this deer. It hit my car. I'm going to cut his throat. It's injured.
Oh, my God. Yeah, so I go over there, and by the time I get to him, he's already dead, right? And then all these freaking country boys show up, and they're like, what's going on? You okay? Deer killed, you know. And I'm like, hey, can we have it? And it was a big deer, man. He had rolls of fat on him, man. It was a big freaking deer, man. And it had to be smashed my car up like that. So I was like, I don't care, do what you want with this thing. You know, I'm out of here. I'm just pissed, man. So now, you know, when I hear people tell me stories about their deer hunting experience, you know, yeah, you know, I took down a 10-pointer, you know, a 25-pointer this year, you know, with a bow and arrow and a freaking 30-06. I'm like, you ain't shit. I killed two deer in 2 days. One with a car, but I maneuvered my car in front of a deer so he'd run into it and kill himself.
and
I ran the other one out of the crowbar and a Swiss Army knife and cut his throat. Match that story, right? I'm like, what?
It's like
those are my deer.
It's like the comedian Ron White. He's like, my brother's out hunting deer, and he's like, I'm out in the bushes with my rifle. My bullet's going 1,800 feet a second. And Ron's like, my car is going 60 miles an hour with a horn on it, and I can still take him out. It's kind of the same thing, yeah. Right?
Well, anyways, that was my little experience there, you know, with the deer. And I'm not a hunter, per se. Not, you know, I don't go out hunting animals. Not that it's nice. I just don't do it. And I don't have time for it. But the two kills, man, 2 days, 2 years, man, freaking without even a damn gun or a freaking bow and arrow, man.
The first deer story is that must have freaked out that guy. That guy probably still tells that story. Like, man, those Delta Force guys are fucking crazy.
Oh, yeah. And I wasn't nice about it because he caught me by surprise.
Yeah.
Literally standing on the edge of the road about 25 yards away, right? And he's holding his map. So he got lost in what happened because he shouldn't have been there. He should have been going the other way. So his officer, he had double back, got confused. He's looking at his map and compass. He looks left and he sees me freaking taking out a deer with a crowbar and a Swiss Army knife. And I think he's just stunned. Like, holy shit, right? And he's just standing there just kind of like, you know, almost catatonic. Like, after I get done doing my, I don't even know he's there yet, right? I'm getting done and I'm holding this thing and bleeding it out, you know? And I realize I'm in the middle of this road. You know, a truck could come around here any minute and do the same thing to me that it did to him the night before. Apparently, he got ran over by a truck, you know. And I look up, and there's a guy standing there. And He's looking at me. And I look at him and go, what the fuck are you looking at? Get out of here. You know, ain't you supposed to be on the road? You want to be a Delta operator? Get moving. So he fucking scampers off in the wood. You got a fucking runner. I come after you too. God damn it.
You're next.
Anyways, those are a couple more chapters. Next week, I was going to go over a child's help for a father's profit. Kind of a sad story, actually, but, you know, we'll continue to march with my time in, you know, in Afghanistan. So anyways, it looks like we're about an hour and a half into it already. It was crazy. It's been pretty fast tonight. Well, I think because we started off with the suicide thing, you know, we talked a little bit about that. Yeah. I thought that was important, man.
It is.
When people reach out to you, man, you know, and people you don't even know, and they're reaching out for help, you know, then, you know, you got to help, man. And so if two guys can reach out to me in 2 days, I'm sure there's a lot more guys out there thinking about this and probably listening to this podcast. And, you know, all I can say is don't do it, man. Yeah. Do not do it.
The way I look at it is when people reach out to talk to you about feeling suicidal, is it's kind of like water spilling over the top of a dam. It took a lot of water before it finally spilled over. So when someone finally comes out and they're like, hey man, can I talk to you? I'm feeling suicidal. It means that it's been welling up for months or years, and it's finally spilling over. So you got to remember the little bit you see, whereas you're just like, oh yeah, sure, man, what do you want to talk about? That person is probably at the end of the rope when they finally reach out. So that's why it is important to talk about it. It's why I always try to, like, when someone does reach out to me, it's why I always like stop everything I'm doing and I talk to them, because it's like when they're finally talking to you, I mean, it's the tip of an iceberg. Like, there's a lot behind it that finally pushes them to talk. So, I mean, it is such a simple answer, but just don't fucking do it. Just hold out. It's okay to be miserable. You can cry. You can be angry. You can do whatever. But you can't undo it. It's a permanent – I know it's like a cheeky quote, but it's a permanent solution to a temporary problem.
And you're not just killing yourself, man. You're killing other people, a part of everybody else. You know, I had a high school friend of mine grow up. I remember she committed suicide. She jumped off the Oakland Bay Bridge, not the San Francisco Bay, but the Oakland Bay Bridge. Same in high school. It's like, what were you thinking, man? You know, it's a cute little girl too. I'm not going to mention her name, but I haven't forgotten her name. I haven't forgot what she looked like. You know, that was a long time ago, but, left an impression, you know, knowing that she jumped off that damn bridge and killed herself. Like, wow. And that go on and on and on, you know, it's just, you don't forget. You just don't forget, right? And so that stays with you, and it kind of haunts you. And it's that negative energy I always talk about, that, you know, we don't need to have that in our lives. But when people kill themselves, that's what they're doing. They're giving you that negative energy, like a seed. You're going to live with it, you know? Because I'm not going to live with it. Now you get to live with it. It's just wrong. You're not hurting nobody but yourself. And you're killing yourself, but you're hurting everybody else. And ultimately, you know, you may not be killing other people, but you're hurting them for no reason. And your revenge is actually not even revenge, because at the end of the day, you're the one losing, you know? So, sucks, man. But anyways.
It is. That's one thing, you know, therapists or suicide hotline people will, that's what they're coached on, is they're like, never tell someone that suicidal, like, hey, you're just going to hurt everyone around you, because that doesn't make them feel any better. And it's true, but at the same time, I can tell you, as someone that, you know, lost a brother, like, I have nothing but love for him, the reality is you hurt everyone around you. And I
absolutely,
and like, I'm not trying to guilt trip anyone, but man, like, you hurt an unbelievable amount. You hurt everyone around you. And who knows? I mean, maybe it's, I don't know. I can't, obviously, I've never pulled the trigger, so I don't know. But I mean, you destroy everyone around you. And I don't think they ever fully recover. I think you just kind of learn to cope with it. It's brutal. It's just hang in. Another tactic I would use when I was most depressed is just choose a date out in the future. Be like, if things don't get better by then, I'll kill myself by then. And then you get to that date and you're like, well, it's a little better, and then it's whatever, and then you just keep kicking that can down the road, and you can do that for years, and then all of a sudden it does get better. You just gotta play games with yourself. Just be like, I'll do it then. And chances are you'll keep bitching out. And then one day things get better and you're still here. It's, yeah, man, just stick with it. Again, message Dale. You can comment here. You can email me. And shit, if you die, you can't keep watching these American Badass episodes. At the very least, you can get more stories like killing deers with Crowbar.
I want to hang around here and see how the world's going to burn down.
Yeah, man.
The way things are going.
That's what I'm here for. It's not like I'm here because I'm like, what day are the nukes going to fly? You know, I'm like, how are they going to go? Is it, you know?
Oh, I don't want to miss that. I want to see how that works.
That's
out,
the ultimate.
Man,
you know? It's the ultimate 4th of July fireworks. Do we nuke China first or does China take us out? It's, hey, man, get your popcorn. You don't want to miss that. It's going to be the best movie ever.
Not only that, man. You know what? I'll tell people out there, you know, man, first of all, if you're in a relationship with someone and you're having these issues, you know, you got to ask yourself, is there something wrong with this relationship? And what am I not getting from this person that I need to, you know, to be happy? But if you're not in a relationship, or maybe what tends to happen a lot of times is people wreck the relationships because of these issues they have, you know? So they don't even have a relationship anymore. So they somehow fouled it up, you know? And, I'll always tell you, man, there's always somebody out there, man. There's someone out there for everyone. I goddamn guarantee it, man. There's always someone out there for everyone. And someone you can truly be happy with and comfortable with, be in love with. And you're never going to get to know that if you're freaking, you know.
If you're gone.
You punch your ticket. Yeah, you know. So hang around, man. There's good stuff out there for everybody. There's good stuff for all of us, man. There's happiness for all of us out there. Sometimes you got to put up with the bullshit to get there, but that's what's called life.
Fuck yeah.
You know, deal with it.
Fuck yeah.
So,
all right, Dale.
All right, man.
I appreciate it. As always, I'll put Dale's Instagram in the description, top comment, and his book. And tune in next week.
Sure. All right, brother.
Dale, I'll see you, man.
Take care, guys.
Take care, buddy. Peace.